In a complicated world, sometimes our best moments are between ourselves, our pocket notebooks, and an expensive pencil sharpened with the scissors from the office supply cabinet. That's why we are sure to take a step back and take note. I'm Ted. I'm here with Adam. This is the latest edition of our podcast, Take Note. Here we are. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing well. How are you?
It's another week of life, and with life comes notes taken in notebooks. I'm good. What do you got? And by what do you got, I mean, of course, in the context of our little universe, what notes, Adam, have you taken in the last week or so that just caught those little life moments that resonated, that pinged for you, that you felt like you had to put down on paper?
Ted, I wrote this. At the gas station yesterday, I noticed that all the products inside the Snack Mart section did not have prices. They all had UPC codes and a long number where the price would be. I asked the guy at the register, no prices on anything, huh? No, he said. How does that work? Well, we're privately owned. I always tell the owners. You must get a lot of questions, I said. Oh, yes. It raises a lot of questions. Do people get angry with you? Yes, they do, he said.
So, how much for the corn nuts? Let's summarize. Let's get to the bottom line here, bud.
You know, I didn't even get to that, but when you ask how much the corn nuts are, there's no way he knows. So the answer to everything must be, oh, let me scan that.
That's it.
Yeah.
At what point, okay, how many times do you think you'd have to ask him for a price before he'd just give you the scanner himself and make you do it?
I wonder how many times he had the exact conversation that I had with him. You know, like the friendly, like this is ridiculous, but I know it's not your fault conversation, which has got to be in the minority, but it's so insane that he must get it all the time.
He sounded ready for it.
Oh, yeah.
Sounded like he had some lines.
He was calm, cool, and collected. What do you got?
So I was talking to my daughter. I think actually we were in the car. I was driving her to school, and we were listening to these storybook things on Spotify, which, side note, Spotify, for childcare and child raising, the $15 a month that I pay for the multiple accounts has paid itself over about a million times. But we were listening to some silly story or picking or doing whatever, and she says, "Ugh, Daddy, why is there always a prince?" I've never felt more proud. What else you got? I think I have one more after you, if you want to throw another one out there.
Yeah, I wrote this. The sink in our bathroom now takes 12 hours to drain. Renovation begins at the end of April. Drano last night let it to drain in only 8 hours. Jennifer turned the water off, which is probably a good idea because I would have just kept adding Drano. If the water was still standing in the sink this morning when the contractor arrived, I was planning to lie. Oh, the kid ran the water this morning. Why? We're paying him to get it fixed. There's nothing to be embarrassed by. But I was going to just totally lie to the guy.
That's the homeownership equivalent of saying, oof, these owners, man, I keep telling them, cheaper prices. Oh, these kids, I keep telling these kids, quit filling up that sink.
I don't know. House is privately owned.
I got one more. So at work, this phrase that I hear this phrase all the time. It's one of those phrases that one person must have said 3 years ago, and it was just sort of poetic and convenient enough that it got repeated. But it's, we really want to stick a flag in the ground on this. You know, it's like when you, have you heard this?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's when when you're like, okay, we're going to broadcast this goal far and wide, or we're going to really make a bold statement. We're going to stick a flag in the ground. So I was reading Humans in New York on Facebook, which it's great. Everybody knows about that. They've been doing it for years. I guess he's in Australia. But he was interviewing, you could probably go and find it, but he's interviewing this lawyer who's recounting the tale of writing a book about some financial crisis. And he's explaining why he wanted to write a book. And he said, this is going to be a terrible Australian accent, but it's really better if you imagine the Australian accent as you read it. But he said, I really wanted to bang a pig in the ground about something. And I thought, man, that is just a much better Australian version. Wanted to bang a pig in the ground about something.
The one we throw around a lot is, that's not the hill I'm going to die on. That's not my hill to die on.
There's Iwo Jima connections. Right. Either way, you basically took the photo negative of the flag in the ground with the dying on that hill. Super. You got another one? What do you got?
I'm good.
Cool. So, you know, I was thinking, it occurred to me, I often want to shout stuff out on the podcast. And you know, I think these podcasts that we enjoy and our own podcast, the shout outs are some of the favorite parts. But I thought, how can we, you know, make that kind of a punchy segment? So I thought, hey, let's have a take note section. Let's take note of a few things that have caught our attention. Beyond kind of actually, you know, the notes that we've taken, you know, online, there's a lot of great stuff being produced. So this is our first take note section. So the first thing I'd like to take note of is the stationery blog, London Parchment, which she did a great blog post recently on the Coastal Edition. And she dug into, she's a geographer. I'm not going to remember her name, but we'll link Priya. It up. Priya. Perfect. She's a geographer, so she brought that special brand of expertise to the Coastal Editions, which I think had been a point of curiosity for a number of field nuts. And she really dug in, and she even went so far as to contact the Field Nugs folks and ask them some detailed questions about the cartography represented. And she also provided some great insight into cartography as a whole, which I hadn't thought about, which the one that sticks with me is that the idea that the cartographer decides what information to include in her map. And I just thought that was a great, I mean, you could say that about an artist, you could say that about a research or anything like that. I thought that was a great little tidbit. And a new, fresh way to think about the Coastal Edition.
I really like that post, too. She also wrote about the Shenandoah Edition, and her post on that is just one of those that I think, I don't know, maybe the consensus was already that the Shenandoah Edition was one of, like, the greatest that they'd done. But if not, her blog post on it, I think, really made people realize just how special that was. She's done a few really good ones. I would like to take note of the Erasable Coffee Swap. I took part in it. You did not, because you had that incident in your childhood and you don't eat food given to you by strangers, and that's fine. We don't have to talk about that. But I got some great coffee. I got, honestly, maybe the best coffee I've ever had. And
wow.
It's Reanimator out of Philadelphia, and the bean that I got, they don't even sell anymore. It was a limited edition. That coffee actually has changed my coffee drinking. I started drinking coffee black again because it was so good, and now I've stuck to it, actually. I'm out of those beans. I'm working on something else, but I'm drinking coffee completely differently. That's how good it was. I also got a number of pencils. And I wrote a little blog post about it on our blog. You can get to takenote.space, and that blog post is called Pencils and Where to Find Them. But I wanted to thank the folks at Erasable, and I think particularly Andy, for setting that up. While I was doing it, and especially when I was sending the beans, I had that moment of, like, why am I spending an extra $10 to send beans to a stranger? But it was really well worth it, and I got a nice note, the blog post about this too, but I got a nice note explaining where all of the pencils came from, and I found that, in a weird way, kind of inspirational.
Can you recall the name of her online store?
So, Sarah Hunter, who sent me the beans and some extra pencils as well, she mentioned her local stationery shop, Amoy, O-M-O-I, One of the pencils came from there. A couple came from Chinatown.
Awesome. I want to take note of Wes Anderson. And I know that sounds a little pop culture-y, but I saw Isle of Dogs, his newest. Absolutely delighted. And this was an instance in which I bounced out of bedtime at a crucial moment. Much appreciation to my wife for being like, okay, go to a movie. And I went to an actual movie theater to watch an actual movie that had been released, you know, within some number of weeks, which felt borderline revolutionary. I was basically like, look at all these people. They just go to these movies. They come to this place. Wow, and they're here at 9 p.m. There's people coming to a movie as I'm leaving the movie, you know, all that kind of thing. I was like, it was like a whole new world. But I realized, and I love Wes Anderson, and he's one of my favorites. But as I was thinking about why I love him, and you know, I was kind of pondering the critiques people might have for him, and you know, those are certainly valid. But what I came down to was Wes Anderson's main goal in all of his movies is to delight the viewer. Like you could distill it, you could take all the subtext and everything you wanted. What he's really trying to do is delight you with some combination of, you know, of dialogue or visuals or style or aesthetic. And maybe I'm just a doddering old man, but I thought, I appreciate that. I appreciate an artist who's just trying to delight the viewer by throwing them something unexpected. And Isle of Dogs fit the bill. I can't think of a film that was anything near like that in my lifetime. So I am taking note of you, Wes Anderson, native of Houston. Rushmore was filmed at my high school, so I guess I must got a slight Homer's bias in his favor. But I'm taking note of Wes, my boy Wes.
That's awesome, man. And you were almost in Rushmore too, right?
My like classmates. I was not almost in it because they went, oh, they're filming a thing. Okay, derp. And some high school students somehow had the wherewithal to show up at, you know, 7 a.m. on the Saturday morning or whatever it was while I was sleeping until 10. And so I can still to this day point to Daniel Tibbetts and go, Tibbetts, gosh, dang it, he got into this movie. That should have been me. That could have been me, but it was Daniel Tibbetts instead.
I have been thinking.
Well, I will say for the record, I always like to point out Wes Anderson added 125% more garbage to the public schools front lawn than actually exists there. So liberties were taken, creative liberties.
Did Wes Anderson go to the public school?
No, he went to the private school next door, which is the Rushmore. He went to the Rushmore, and he's strewn garbage all about the public school that his character is banished to after he...
So I had been thinking, I've been thinking a lot about Wes Anderson too, because for the same reason, you know, I haven't seen Isle of Dogs yet, but I'm itching to see it. What I have done is I've listened to the Isle of Dogs soundtrack, score. Yeah.
So good.
And, I have a really deep relationship with the Grand Budapest Hotel score, by Alexander Desplat. I listen to it at least once a week in my house. Normally on the weekend, it's like an early morning, Saturday morning or Sunday morning, as soon as everybody's up, and we play it loud, and it starts with this yodeling, chanting thing, and it means a lot to me, and it centers me in some weird way, even though that's an odd thing to say. And so I was really excited about hearing the Isle of Dogs score, which I like. I mean, it hasn't taken on that meaning for me yet. And I was thinking a lot about it. In fact, there's two things. First off, we almost made the soundtrack, or not the soundtrack, the intro music for this podcast, a kind of a remix from a Grand Budapest Hotel from one of the tracks because I like it so much, and there was just too much dinging. Imagine this podcast with every 15 seconds of bing, bing.
And the lawyer fees were through the roof too. Those royalties, they were stacking.
That's right. But so as I've been thinking about this, and I've thought about this for a long time. I come back to this essay that George Saunders wrote in the New York Times Magazine 2 years ago about a Wilco song, and without knowing that you were going to talk about Isle of Dogs, I was thinking about talking about this essay and about Grand Budapest Hotel, and I wrote down a lot of from this essay because I couldn't find, it's George Saunders, so I couldn't figure out what to excerpt, and there were so many brilliant sentences. So he writes about a Wilco song called One Sunday Morning, and he writes, in the current bombastic political movement, I find myself listening obsessively to Wilco's 12-minute opus, One Sunday Morning, which induces in me, reliably, a suite of feelings I might describe as patient, quiet mindfulness and firm resolve to love better, and serves as an antidote to the harshness of the moment, a reminder. He writes later, it puts me in mind of a group of lifelong pals on a front porch, trying to musically solve some existential problem they can't quite articulate. And then later in the essay, listening to One Sunday Morning every time fixes me like some sort of oral medicine. I feel a positive alteration in my body and mind, a renewed sense of humility at the sadness of the world, and a corresponding resolve to keep trying to be better, freshly reminded of the stakes of being alive and of the fact that there are at my disposal more positive resources than I'm currently employing in this. One Sunday Morning serves for me as a reliable 12-minute prayer. And the whole essay is actually amazing. The things that he says about Wilco's music and what they do time and again with their songs is really something else. It's worth reading. But that is very much related to how I listen to that Grand Budapest Hotel soundtrack. It just takes me an hour instead of 12 minutes.
Awesome. Oh, that was awesome. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome, Ted.
So when you cued me into kind of those connection points just before the show, the idea of convergences is something that you and I actually have connected about over the years. Lawrence Weschler wrote his book, Everything That Rises Must Converge, which is actually, I strongly recommend. It's a book about seemingly unconnected things that create a connection for him. And a lot of it is art, but it's kind of art, architecture, culture, science, that sort of thing. That's just a total side note, but it reminded me of a convergence that I actually noted recently too, which is pretty much on the opposite side of the deep and insightful spectrum. But I was doing the neighborhood cleanup day. The city council announced, okay, it's District K is doing it's your district cleanup day. And my wife went off with an actual work crew of grown-ups to do actual, heavy-duty cleaning on a big street. And I took the kids out to our neighborhood park. And we did some real cleaning. My daughter's specialty is she will sit at the bottom of the bleachers next to the baseball field and find every piece of glass that has been deposited there over the years. She loves finding glass. She'll dig in the dirt, and she amazingly continually keeps finding pieces of glass, to which I say, you are never allowed to walk barefoot in this place, ever, not once. But I was doing my fair share of picking up garbage, and over by the baseball field, it was clear there. People clean up near the playground all the time, but I was finding some preserved trash. And I actually found more than one, of those pull beer tabs that from the 70s and early 80s that you just straight pull off of a beer, and and it just becomes a disembodied little piece of metal that in back in those days, most people probably just tossed on the ground. So I saw one of those and just, you know, the immediate connection I made was a recent Kotke.org share where he shared and expressed his deep appreciation for this video of the engineering guy, I think he's called. We'll link it up. But he does this, I don't know, 7-minute or 11-minute explanation of the engineering of a beer can or a soda can, an aluminum can. And part of that was the explanation of the pop top. And he briefly mentions kind of the old pull tops and why they're so terrible. And he does a whole breakdown of the new thing, the new pop tops, which the part that stuck out for me was that you don't just break the seal with these tabs. He went into this whole thing where the first lever action when you pop a soda actually like presses down in the middle and releases some kind of pressure so that you can then pop the top open. I mean, I don't begin to understand it, but it's basically like, you dumbass, this is way more complicated and interesting than you thought it was, and now I'm going to explain to you why. But as I was watching that and he did the pull tab thing, I had that overwhelming sense of nostalgia when I thought back to, you know, being a kid in the backyard for the birthday parties or whatever, and the grown-ups are popping the beer tabs and they're dropping the tabs into their beer. And I remember that's what people used to do. They used to crack those things off and they drop them in there. Well, I think it seemed very grown up to be able to put something into your can that could very easily lodge in your throat. But because you're a grown up, you have that special magic to not kill yourself by accidentally swallowing it. I actually remember having that specific thought, like, my God, that's dangerous. But you guys can pull it off because you're gigantic and I'm just got Ninja Turtle face paint on. So to see those tabs just a few days later, like embedded in the, you know, the mud of this outside of this baseball field, to me was an interesting, it was an interesting convergence.
Was it the tabs or was it the can?
It was the tab. It was only the tab. So it's a little circle of aluminum and a little kind of teardrop shaped piece of metal. The shape of the drinking, the drinking hole. Yeah.
Hmm. You think there's like welcome hipster beer cans to the drinking hole. Have the pull tab?
See, that would be awesome. Yeah. Actually, that's a really good idea. Except it's so horrible for the. I feel like a turtle, a sea turtle's just like gonna drink that thing right down, lodged in the throat. That's why they changed
for
it.
The sea turtles.
It's terrible. For the sea turtles. Nice.
That's good.
That's my convergence.
Ted, I don't know that we had a lot of funny stuff this episode, so I just want to add that my 3-year-old Wiley, he's taken to putting his butt on me or on anyone and then getting really excited about farting on me. He also today said, "Welcome, Satan." So, you know, just normal dad stuff.
Let's do this again, Adam.
Have a good week, Ted.